everybody. Welcome to, that was a bit of an abrupt ending. That was my fault, sorry. Welcome to Wallace Hartley Presents the Podcast. I'm your host, Glenn Lamont, along with my co-host joining me this evening from an exotic port of call somewhere in the heart of East Vancouver, Mr. Paul Chartrey. Thanks for being here tonight.
No problem.
Boy,
what's with the music, Glenn? That's a nice improvement. It sounds like we're the Tonight Show and we got a band.
Well, we do.
Right here,
performed by a very good friend of mine, Mr. Mike Kirby, who is, if you know the blues in Vancouver and the Lower Mainland, Mike, then you'll know the name, Mike Kirby. As we progress here with the program, I am going to be introducing different original local bands.
Like that.
I think it'd be a nice change from listening to me drone on about all the things that annoy me on a regular basis. But holy crap, what a couple of weeks, huh? You know what I mean?
It's interesting.
So
times.
They loaded up the truck and they moved to Ottawa. Parliament building, swimming the holes. Holy crap. Listen, I got to tell you, I am not a fan of Justin Trudeau for so many, many, many reasons, which is why I try and avoid reading Rex Murphy opinion pieces, because I hate Rex Murphy even more than Justin Trudeau. And then I end up, after reading Rex, I defend Justin, because it's rocking a hard place. And Rex Murphy, let's face it, is like a bad car accident. You don't want to look, but you just can't help yourself. And also...
Yeah, curiosity does kill me. Yeah.
Oh, man. And also, I hate being on the same side as people who think that the 2030 agenda is when they're going to sterilize a certain percentage of the population and take away everyone's guns. And the vaccine is just an excuse to microchip everyone. On a personal note, if you've witnessed some of the interviews of some of the people who were there at the convoy, the Freedom Convoy, I'm sure you'll agree with me that they should have neither children or guns at any point in their life, or for that matter, anything sharp. But the Liberal government that we have in power has chosen to ignore these people at their peril. Why Justin refused to meet with these people is beyond me. I disagree with most of what they have to say. I think most of them are entitled whiners who are throwing a temper tantrum because someone asked them to actually do something for the good of the community that they didn't want to do. But at the same time, in a true democracy, everyone has a right to be wrong. By not inviting them to the table and going from early on dismissing them as some sort of fringe element that will just, you know, fade away, and then coming back and invoking the Emergency Measures Act, you have essentially martyred them. And you've now given them probably more support than they ever had before. Worst of all, I think you have driven that wedge even deeper into the division that already exists here in Canada. Police forces all across the country are either sending or considering sending extra officers to work with the RCMP and the OPP, who are already supporting the city police. Other than a huge inconvenience to the people who live in the downtown core and a couple of minor incidents, they really haven't been doing much of anything compared to protests in the U.S. Hell, compared to America, everything that has happened so far is pretty much just another day at the office for Americans, or simply a Friday night downtown. Now, is this whole thing salvageable at this juncture? I don't think so. To me, this is a growing movement and it's already attracting bad actors. White nationalists and other militia-style racist groups are already on board. Both sides are accusing the other of behaving like Nazis, and both sides would be correct. On the one hand, the government is calling in the military, and on the other, the convoy protesters are taking tactics straight out of the brown shirt playbook when it comes to creating fear and intimidation. Will this controversy bring about a much-needed change, or will all this start to dissipate once the COVID restrictions are lifted nationwide? That's hard to say, but what I do know is if this government proceeds with using the Emergency Measures Act against ordinary citizens, then they'll be doing exactly what they are accused of doing, and that is trampling on the rights of individuals. In other words, for the Freedom Convoy and all those people who are supporting them, be careful what you wish for. You may just get it. I didn't think it would last this long.
I was a little surprised. You know what I really appreciated in that the very beginning of what your statement there was, because that's the exact language that popped into my head once it got to about week two. You are ignoring this at your peril. Mm.
Absolutely.
Like, given the level of organization and the amount of people, this immediately, like, listen, I've done politics for a decent amount of time, and I've been to demonstrations that truly are representing a fringe group, and the numbers are small. They're easily dispersed. They don't have a coherent message. Like, none of those characteristics existed in this. I mean, framing the message initially was they took a while to find their legs, but once they did, they hit a nerve. And I think they hit a nerve with, like, people who were tired of lockdowns or restrictions and mandates and wearing masks, and even people who support vaccination and lockdowns and wearing masks are sick of it.
Mm. And you do too, at our day jobs and my other casual jobs, which, you know, are both in mental health and addiction. Yeah, my hands are, like, the skin is about ready to fall off from washing them and using hand sanitizer. I'm itchy from, if I don't shave, the paper mask. Do you find that? I'm sick of the protocols, yep, too. But it's my job. How can I put it? It's my job. If I don't like it, I can quit, right? But if I want to feed my family, I have to abide by those restrictions, and so I do. But I heard an example of, you know, and probably lots of people have said the same thing, but I heard one truck driver at this convoy say, well, I'm sitting here because I don't have a job, so I have all time in the world. I mean, I should be crossing the border right now. Well, my answer to that is, hey, here's an idea. Get a vaccine. But they choose not to for whatever reason. But my attitude is, again, if I don't like what's presented to me, I can quit. And I guess I can go find something else to do that maybe doesn't involve. Maybe I can find something to do that is just me working on my own. I don't have to worry about it as much. But
yeah, it also, it's very symbolic though of, like, I agree with that stance of, like, okay, these are the conditions of your job, you got to make a decision about that, like, and it's really interesting how, like, you know, the framing of this, like, kept changing. So it was like anti-mandate. Now They probably should have stuck with that because you can, I think you can win over a lot of people who are like, it shouldn't be required to do a bunch of things, right? So, there's a certain chunk of the population that I think, it's the whole body autonomy argument, right? It's like I get to decide. If you believe that, a woman has the right to decide what kind of birth control they decide to use, that's body autonomy. That's like a choice that they're allowed to make, right? And also, that's, I think, to me, that was like one of the most fundamental and understandable arguments was, I would like to choose to do something different or take the risk. Now, I'm also somebody who is like, if you can make that choice, but in my opinion, you still better follow protocol of what's, is going to make everybody else safe and okay. Like you don't go to work when you're sick, you wear a mask, you keep your distance. Like when the government says or the medical advice is that, big crowds is a bad idea, then you don't go to big, like that stuff. I don't have a problem following that, like, because it makes sense to me. Like, that just helps less people get sick.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm the same. I mean, I happen to agree with the protocols that were put in place, the health restrictions. But at the same time, our government has an amazing talent for just either being completely wishy-washy and ambivalent, or these are the rules and you're going to follow them. And also we have the same, well, we have the same thing that America has to deal with. Separate levels of state government up here, separate levels of provincial governments. And we know each province, you know what I mean? Like, Alberta, Saskatchewan, Manitoba hate us here in British Columbia, sometimes for good reason. Well, mostly for good reason. But you know what I mean? They all, so they're kind of all on the same page. And then we here on the left coast did things our way. And then Doug Ford, what does he do again? Anyways, Doug Ford
Ontario, you're
did
talking
things
about?
his way. But either way, we have, there were no,
So, Glenn, I was going to ask you something
yeah.
because it always struck me that there's differences always between Canada and the United States, but one thing that seems very similar, and I've often wondered if it has to do with like population density and stuff. Like even crowded places in Canada aren't that crowded, but they're somewhat comparable to the United States,
You
right?
could, yeah.
So all the places in the United States that were the most populated generally kind of had more restrictions and told people to like not gather in big groups, and then almost all the other places, like the four or the three central Canadian provinces, which are quite sparsely populated,
Yes.
I can understand why. Like, I often thought that one of the big differences is that when there's just less people around, and it's easy to like, avoid it. Like, you don't really have to say, like, don't be in a group of 50 when there's only 100 people in town, right? Like,
Absolutely. But he
I don't know if this makes any sense or it's even scientific, but I often thought that, like, why is there so much similarity with like the center of both countries in terms of like their attitude towards
Yes,
this, right?
and I agree with that. It makes sense. However, what I don't understand, now I can understand that those provinces which have, I would have to say, traditionally been conservative voting provinces, And so their attitudes are going to be somewhat aligned with this Freedom Convoy kind of thing. What kind of blew me away was the amount of support from British Columbia, right, for the whole thing. And the attitude from the as big a population in BC here that, you know, was anti-vax and anti-mask from the get-go. I didn't realize that we had that many, you know, wannabe Trump supporters up here where we live, right? I mean, maybe I don't get out much. Well, none of us have gotten out much in 2 years, but you know what I mean? Like,
I do appreciate that. It's a good question because I often wonder, like, why? Like, because, like you said, the little bit that I'm getting informed on about, like, support.
Well, what did you tell me?
Like, there's a lot of money. A lot of money came from BC.
You said it was, like, over half of the money raised in Canada came from our province.
Yeah.
Blows me away.
So it's very interesting, but I often – what's – I'm starting to question more and more is I have the same sort of bias of viewpoint that you do in terms of, like, I do think it is a, like, a left right kind of dynamic, but I'm questioning that more and more in the sense that maybe it's just not so clean.
A huge gray area there. And as I said, like, I'm the first to disagree with most of what these people support and believe. And I'm also the first one to, you know, make poor inbred hillbilly trailer trash jokes just because it's fun. But at the same time, I find myself defending some of their ideals and some of their arguments more often than I thought I would be. And that is because I think we have gotten to a point now where watching, first of all, I see a lot of arguing. So, and on both sides. And it's not about coming to terms with anything. It's about who's right. I want to be right.
Or calling you. Yeah, that, or calling each other.
Yeah, but it's,
like, you don't have an argument. It's just like, I'll assassinate your character. You're a horrible person. That's why you're wrong.
Exactly. And so when I see that happening, I realize that nobody is talking about solutions. And what I'm also seeing is both sides in the media are just slaughtering one another. I mean, you know, it's just what you said. It's a lot of character assassination. It's a lot of, you know, who do these people think they are? It's a lot of very, you know, self-righteous, up on my high horse kind of political grandstanding. And many of the, you know, the opinion pieces that I read are black and white. You know, you got people on the left-leaning journalists just basically saying, you know, how selfish you are and you're doing a disservice to your country. And then you got, you know, the right-leaning journalists saying, hey, how come nobody's allowed to ask questions? When did that happen? And the bottom line for me, the big one that just made me stop and really try and take stock of things was the fact that nobody invited these guys to sit down at the table. Like, nobody. Everybody who has a beef with the government or whoever at least gets an opportunity to sit down and state their case. This never happened. We went from Trudeau going, ignore them. They're a bunch of lunatics. They're a bunch of fringe nutcases. You know, they'll do their thing. And we're certainly not going to be swayed by anything they have to say. And then he promptly left to self-isolate. See, I'm becoming one of them now. There's a conspiracy.
Well, that was suspicious as hell, Glenn. Come on.
There's,
That was just so suspicious. I think it's, I don't
but
know.
The, sorry, just
there's two things
just
I
to
wanted to.
finish. So
Yep. Yep.
he
Okay.
promptly left, and then when he came back, it was like all guns blazing. Let's invoke the Emergency
Yes.
Measures Act. At what point did you say, okay, you know, you people are really annoying and you're driving everybody who lives in downtown Ottawa crazy. So come on in, sit down, tell us what it is you want. Maybe we'll try and figure something out. That never happened. And then when they came back, it was like, oh, you're still here? Well, now we're bringing in the army. So I hope you're happy now, crazy convoy people.
So here's like what just doesn't jive for me. So in politics, like there's always like, you know, five or six reasons for every one decision that gets made, right?
Yeah.
Like it's a strategy game, right? So it's about power and it's about holding power and securing like enough of a base to keep power. So, okay. So it starts, and the initial reaction in the media is, you know, it's dismissive, right?
Sure.
It's this kind of like urban cosmopolitan, like, oh, isn't that quaint? All these like working class truckers and farmers from Alberta are like gonna try and do something, right? But there's like 12 of them, right? So, okay, so that's how it starts. And then it actually like turns into something. It's like a, it's like an actual protest. There's like bigger numbers and there's, you know, they're kind of like, okay, day one, there's a pretty big crowd. All this stuff is happening. What I think really messed them up was the extremely, well, extreme is probably a poor word, but just the competency of the organizers to set up a situation where they could stay. And also to, I heard a podcast, which I thought it was a great reference, like using trucks and horns and blocking off streets was brilliant political theater.
Absolutely.
Right? This is well thought out. So it creates annoyance, it creates attention. It creates all this other stuff. And like you said, like, so Justin Trudeau disappears for a while and then he comes back. Lo and behold, I'm trying to figure that out. I'm watching this American news broadcast that I watch. And
Sorry.
One of them, I don't know if it's accurate.
It's not
one
Fox,
of them,
is it?
No. One of the hosts on this show, it's called Breaking Points. It's something I check out every now and then. One of the hosts basically says, and I haven't checked it to see if it's true, but it was believable, is that Joe Biden makes a phone call to Justin Trudeau. And the next day, the Emergency Act gets declared. And their rationale was, Joe Biden phones and says, hey, this is interfering with American capitalism. Do something.
Listen, that is perfectly... That's perfectly believable to me, because that was when they were at the bridge there in Windsor.
The Ambassador Bridge.
The Ambassador Bridge in Windsor, which is they were blocking, you know, they were messing with the automobile industry in Detroit, which, you know what I mean? You're poking the bear with sharp sticks on that one. I fully believe that, because I've seen how, you know, Mr. Trudeau responds to, you know, the big guys, the cool kids. You know what I mean? Like, didn't we do that? Didn't we just do that and get through doing that with the whole Meng Wanzhou Huawei trial? I mean, wasn't that?
I know. I mean, it was like a call from Washington.
We need you to arrest this person for us. What'd they do? That doesn't matter. Just stop them. Quit asking questions and do your job, Canadian Mountie guy. Yeah. I'm the FBI. You know, and that RCMP guy, that poor guy, he probably went home that night to his wife and went, okay, I shouldn't be talking about this. But you know who called me today? The FBI. Yeah. the Federal Bureau of Investigation, those guys, I'm working with them. They're probably going to give me a badge or something, you know, temporary thing.
So here's the thing, Glenn, like it's, there's something that is building in my mind more and more as this goes on. One is, it's rooted in like how we get to this route to like the Emergency Act, and also how it's set up publicly in the media. So you made a reference to the media. I mean, is Canada actually, like, have we caught up with the United States now? Because like the United States has been entrenched in this like divisive media presentation where there's like actual, you know, political sides. You know, there's Fox News and there's MSNBC, and they clearly support a specific political party. And, you know, and the media I'm reading now is like, it's shocking. Like you read stuff that's generally like kind of like liberal press, and it's like, you know, they read the comment section. There's all these people who want the army to come in, and it's like, yeah, really?
Oh, totally, like, dude. And this was from? And this was coming from the so-called progressives, the left-leaning liberals.
Yes.
And I'm like, what the hell happened to you people? It's like, oh my God, scratch the surface, and there's a conservative under there. Because you're right. I talked to so many people who were like, I don't get it. You know, enough is enough. Just bring somebody in there to get rid of them. You know, bring the army in. Wait, the what? Well, you know, I mean, they're disrupting everything. Yeah, that's called a protest. People, last time I checked, people are allowed to do that here without getting shot. And of course I say that, but then immediately comes to mind is, you know, the Wet'suwin, you know, land defenders and the LNG pipeline who.
Oh yeah. People get shot at protests all the time in Canada. They just happen to.
Yeah. So nobody hears about it. Right. I mean, the RCMP who are, do they still call them the RCMP or the LNG, transit police or some shit now, but either way.
Yeah.
But
I mean, are we suffering from that in terms of our media?
Yes,
like it's just
absolutely.
Like this division. And so when you have this division and it's all this name calling and all this stuff that we've been discussing, it's like, so then you don't actually talk about like something that might make sense where you could actually have a conversation and you could be like, okay, you know, one thing that would be worth discussing, I think, just in terms of like health policy would be, so vaccinations don't actually stop the spread.
Yeah.
Like that would be worth talking about. Okay. So how do we change things if that's the case? Like what's the strategy? And not just like, oh, even if you ask that question, you're like, there's something wrong with you. Like you don't believe in science like, wait a second. The science says, the people who actually do the science are telling us this.
Exactly. Right? And here's the thing. Some of the arguments that these people have now, and mind you, this is mostly to do with what's going on in America, but like some of the stuff is valid. I couldn't argue with it after I did a little digging. One of the things being that they're constantly saying this, right? Follow the money. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, they're right. So the CDC in America receives ridiculous sums of money from Big Pharma.
Which, absolutely.
Like, to me, I'm not very comfortable with that. Hindsight, when you say, here, just take this, it'll make you feel better. Well, yeah, but didn't you just get paid like a gazillion dollars from Pfizer? Well, yeah, but that was for like office supplies. Anyways, just take this. You know what I mean? So
but I think the convoys also will follow the money thing, right? Because we've talked.
They are. And so right? Some of their, again, some of the stuff that they're, you know, arguing about. Yeah, like I would have to agree with. Yeah, I'm choking on it, but I would have to agree with them. The problem.
But that's the thing, Glenn. That's the thing that, like, I think is missing in the conversation. And that is the fact that you don't have to like somebody's political orientation, but that doesn't mean they're wrong about everything.
No, exactly.
Right? And also, follow the money. Like, what was the last stuff that you and I talked about? 36,000 small donations from Canada. That's not a fringe movement. When there's 36,000 people sending in 40, 50, 100 bucks, that's a lot of people willing to do this. Not only that, again, like from an American news source, because they're freaking out over the fact that we're willing to even go there with this emergency act, right? Because like you said in earlier, what has happened in Ottawa and at the border in Alberta and stuff, that's nothing. That's a day in the park in America, right? That shit happens like all over the States every day someplace, right? Like some four crazy guys who think they need to start a race war, like get caught with weapons. That's probably happens every day at a police force somewhere in America, right? So it's, to us, it's like surprisingly shocking and all this stuff, which is a bit bullshit, because that's another thing I don't like about the media in this country is I heard somebody on a podcast say something that I thought was a brilliant expression. But when it comes to white supremacy, Canada punches above its weight.
Yeah, well,
we always have.
Hugely. And I mean, you just look at those guys at is it Coots or Coats? How do you pronounce it? Alberta.
Coots, I think. Alberta?
That sounds more hillbilly to me. Coots. sorry. I apologize to the people of Coots. However, now that's where they caught these guys. Did you check them out? The Diagonos?
Yeah. it's probably fringe in fringe world. Well,
it may be fringe, but they had a lot of weapons. But sorry.
Oh, they did. They were well armed.
Just to digress for just a moment. Have you checked out their mission, their idea, what they want to do?
Oh, what they want to create? Yeah, that diagonal state from Alaska to Florida.
Okay, so everybody, listen up. We're gonna form our own country. It's gonna be a long, skinny country that runs diagonally, just us and. And well, wait, aren't you worried about those big swaths of population and land on either side of you with much more money and military might? Again, we just, because Skeeter, he come up with the flag and then it all came from there. Yeah. So Slash, that's just a long, skinny. What the hell is that? Like, even other white supremacists must be making fun of them. Come on.
That's what I was thinking when I heard about it. I was like, wow,
this is
new. I used to spend an inordinate amount of time in my early university days researching the far right and white supremacy in Canada. So I haven't done a lot of that research in a long time, but the little glimpses of it that I'm getting is like it hasn't changed an awful lot. But it actually is a much bigger, more significant piece of our country and our political history than many, many people would like to admit. It's like, you know, like it's been around for and tolerated like quite a bit in this country. Like they've had a tremendous amount of freedom and a pretty good run at it. It is something I do worry about with this protest and this convoy is their the ease with which they were able to insert themselves. And that's either, you know, there's a few things there, Glenn, that I think are worth consideration. One is there could be extreme naivety on the part of the people, the majority of the people who don't have such extreme views about how they're inserting themselves and them not even like being aware of that process or how that works politically or anything. Or there's conscious tolerance for it because they're trying to actually position themselves as, you know, it's that classic case of the old 60s stuff, that Saul Alinsky stuff of Rules for Radicals, where you have like the radicals that will like, you know, block the bridge, and then you've got kind of the bureaucratic wing that basically will talk to the officials and negotiate the deal to get actually what they really want.
Well,
right? And to me, I just view it as a strategy. When you said at your peril, this gets ignored. Like, this could be the beginning of like an effective far right political organization that pushes the Conservative Party to the right.
Oh, I believe that 100%. But, you know, it's no surprise to me that there's that level of, or that many, you know, organizations that are either white nationalist or racist or anti-Muslim, anti-immigration. That comes as no surprise. And like I've said this many, many times, this so-called country is, you know, it applies to America as well. You know, it was founded on resource extraction. It was founded by rich white people. Like, I laugh at the Americans when they're like, freedom and this, you know, goes right back to the roots of our nation. No, the roots of your nation were fat old white men who didn't want to give their money to the queen or a king at the time. So they, you know, we're going to start our own country, goddammit. And Canada, same thing, but for a different reason. They came here to, you know, take everything they could possibly get their hands on. They had to, you know, get rid of, or at least subdue. Unfortunately for them, people already lived here, but that didn't seem to be too much of a problem, ethically or morally for them. So, yeah, when you talk about, you know, people saying we don't like the fact, we feel that, you know, we're starting to become a minority, that's just par for the course for, you know, where we, the foundations of this nation, you know, of Canada, that was built on you know, land theft and resource extraction and all that. So yeah, it's no surprise. I think everybody, listen, the amount of people I talk to, don't even get me started on this shit, Paul. The amount of white people I talk to that when you start,
you know, white people,
listen, then? Man, when you start to have this conversation, the first thing to come out of their mouth is, listen, I'm not racist, but just because you said that, that's how you started this conversation, tells me you're racist as hell. Because if you're so, like, why be afraid to have that conversation? Why be afraid to look at implicit, albeit, you know, maybe call it what you want, subconscious biases that you have towards, whether it be Indigenous people or any, just people of color in general.
Yeah.
Right? But yeah, I was no surprise to me at all that there was a racist element involved, right? I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm sure there are plenty in this convoy. There are plenty of like hockey moms and people who, you know what? People who are scared, because that is one of the things that is so appealing about these movements. Whether it be, you know, this Freedom Convoy or QAnon or any of that, you know, people who are, they don't know what's going on. You know,
that's a really good point, Glenn, because here's one of the things that always struck me is like, also like why it's not fringe and why there's arguments here that are worthy of discussion, that we're being distracted by, you know, are you vaccinated or are you not or whatever, right? So one of the key things that is on the table for debate, because you can't really talk about it anywhere else. Like what I worry about is a lot of sort of mainstream people are being driven into the arms of people who are willing to organize on the far right, because you can't talk about something like, for instance, what a vaccine passport represents in the big picture. So think about it, Glenn. We've never in world history had a method of actually determining your access to things based on your medical status. This has happened in history, but not at this scale and not with the technological infrastructure that's in place. So, for instance, the actual passports we use to get on airplanes and stuff, those were implemented as a temporary measure during the Spanish flu. Right? And it was because of the spread of the flu, and it was a way of like trying to like control that situation. Sure. Right? So this is another attempt at controlling nature, right? Because we're trying to control a virus and the spread of a virus, and there's medical knowledge behind like trying to stop it, which I get. But we also have a system now where like it may, like it's not the actual vaccine passport itself that's the issue, but it's the technology of being able to actually select people to have access. Now, just think of how that could be applied to many, many other things if it was chosen to. It's not the technology, it's the application of the technology. And this is a question that people are trying to raise, and why they don't want vaccine passports, because they see it as the thin edge of the wedge. And if you say this in liberal company, you're considered a tinfoil hat right-wing nut
but
job.
But listen, I went for lunch today, and it had never dawned on me, but since I was, you know, preparing for this particular episode, when I was standing in line, and then it got to be us, and vaccine, and I'm like, proof of vaccine, what? Oh, right. And then as I was retrieving it from my phone, I'm thinking, I all of a sudden never even thought about it in the past, but today I was like, I'm a little uncomfortable with this, right? Like, I'm not saying I'm fully vaccinated, I have my booster shot, right? I mean, hey, I'm all behind the health measures, but I was like, I'm not, this is like crazy that I'm doing this. I didn't say anything.
Right, because the techno-utopians are basically saying, oh, all this like distributed knowledge about you, your medical records are like easily accessible and you can get like medical help, or you can be monitored by something that goes directly to a doctor when there's an alert. Like, all this stuff is like, you know, we're data. We're like, data's money. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, everything's getting commodified, right? Like, it's like we're being incorporated into this big sort of technosphere that, and it's just creeping into our lives, and we have less and less choice about it. And, you know, like, it, like literally the smartphone itself is actually like the purest symbol of how it all got started. Because once we got addicted to those little fuckers, look what happened.
Yeah, absolutely. And listen, you know, going back to what we were saying before, the way some people get, you know, kind of gravitate towards these fringe elements, which, you know, aren't so fringe anymore. If you say to a person, listen, if you're unsure, you know, here's some websites. I'll send you some links. There's some good studies that were done, you know, in Spain. Also, you know, check out Canada Land podcast or those other idiots, Wallace Hartley Presents. They talk about a lot of this stuff in great deal. You can see their eyes already glazing over, right? But when somebody comes along and goes, hey, I feel you, and I'm on your side. And here's the thing. I'm going to let you in on a secret. It's all about this. And these are the people behind it. Scary, huh? And that person is going to go, holy shit, why didn't I ever see this before? How much money? Can I give you some money? I want to, how can I join you? How do I? Yeah, come on, take me with you. Right? That's how it happens. Because, as you said, nobody ever bothered explaining it to anyone. They just went, this is what we got to do. And so you better do it. Right?
But also, Glenn, we're learning more and more not as much as I think should be discussed, but were, you know, a lot of very intelligent people who get paid very good money to make even richer people a lot of money are designing systems based on the most sophisticated knowledge about human behavior to get us to consume.
Absolutely.
And to get us to be like primed and pumped and, you know, fearful or excited or, you know, it's spectacle, it's addiction culture. It's like, I don't know what you want to call it, but it's like when you have people spend that kind of money to manipulate large numbers of people for profit, like they're going to be successful because like they're spending an awful lot of money. So you have these systems in place now where it's not about building community or consensus or conversation or dialogue or discussion or debate. It's about fear so that you can push them towards consumption.
Oh, without a doubt.
Even if that means consuming news,
but
right? Because news is no product.
But
right?
Let us, before we run out of time here, you know, sometimes when I see podcasts on like YouTube and they're like 2.5, 3 hours, I'm like, that's crazy. But yeah, I realize why, because I could talk about this shit for days. But let's.
Yeah, I mean, a long conversation form is actually kind of interesting sometimes.
So let us just for a moment go back to the Emergency Measures Act, which was kind of the focus of this episode. And so here's some bullet points. And you said some interesting stuff about that earlier. But first of all, so this Emergency Measures Act, which used to be called the War Measures Act, it's only been invoked twice in the history of our country, right? Or actually three times. So the first time was during the war, hence War Measures Act, which resulted in internment of Japanese Canadians, which was a whole other, you know.
Well, in World War One, they interned Ukrainians.
Yeah, that's right.
German, Italian. Like, there is more than just one. The one in most recent memory is the Japanese in World
right.
War Two.
So that was first time. But the other two times were by our own Justin Trudeau, and then his dad back in the 70s, Pierre Elliott Trudeau. So the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. And so the, yeah, I mean, it's crazy, right? So.
Yeah, I actually thought of that quite a bit
his
as well.
His dad,
like, oh my God.
His dad brought it in 1970 for the whole FLQ crisis, right? Because.
Yes.
You know, which they were like, oh, it's terrorism. I think too, like they were certainly under the influence of the Commonwealth in that respect. So I'm sure they were getting lots of advice from the UK, who had, you know, obviously at that time were dealing with the troubles in Northern Ireland, which was an illegal occupation in itself. And so they probably...
There had to have been, Glenn, there had to have been. They're, you know, the FLQ kidnapped a British
diplomat.
Yeah,
so the Brits were probably going, yeah, well, you know, we have the same problem with the damn Irish, so here's what you got to do, right? And the FLQ was, you know, I don't know. Like, yeah, they kidnapped a guy, and I guess they blew a couple of things up.
They did murder one of the kidnapped
did they?
Victims. The British diplomat got murdered.
Right.
So, I mean, when that stuff started happening, that's why, you know, the War Measures
but
Act.
It,
but many people living in Quebec were like, this is overkill.
Well,
man.
Of course it's
this
overkill.
Not,
and why would you not take, I don't want to get too much into it, but why would you not just leave that up to either, you know, whatever branch of the RCMP or whatever to investigate and follow through and, you know what I mean? But either way, so... That's what his dad used it, and then Justin is using it now. So originally, the War Measures Act, as you said, it dates back to 1914, and it was intended to give Canadian government extra powers during times of war, invasion, and insurrection due to real and perceived injustices related to use of the act. So the Emergencies Act, which is what we're talking about now, of 1998, is part of the revised statutes of Canada. Such legislation is reserved for use under the most extreme emergencies. So a bunch of guys parking their trucks in downtown Ottawa and honking their horns and peeing on some statues,
it's the most extreme
that
emergency.
Does not meet my criteria of the most extreme emergency.
Or blocking a trade route to the United States, like at an Alberta border, a Manitoba border, and
listen,
an Ontario.
As I said before, you start messing with the auto industry, that's like Jimmy Hoffa territory, man. So, yeah, that one I consider, that's a little more hardcore, right? When you bring, like, we can talk all day long about political beliefs and who's right and who's wrong, but you start pissing off organized crime. You know what I mean? I'm out. I got shit to do. Sorry. Yeah. So,
they play by different rules.
But you made an interesting point that, like, so the 1970 crisis, that when you bring that up to most people, they don't even know about it. They don't even know what the hell it was.
I was speaking to somebody in their 30s and they had no clue what I was talking about. And it was like, it just made me think, like, wow, like, don't we teach this in school? Like, isn't that like high school history?
I was saying to you,
I don't know, I'm making assumptions, right?
I don't remember it in high school. I don't remember. I didn't go to high school that much. But
I remember it because of family. Yes, we were talking about that. Both my parents were French Canadian, and my mother had her entire family living in Montreal at the time. And, you know, like, this was like when they were growing up, even in the, you know, in the 40s and 50s, like, the themes that the FLQ and the separatists were talking about were open conversation in French Canadian families.
Well, and for me, it was my old man who was, I learned all about this stuff from him. He was a socialist for sure. He was a diehard union guy, but he also worked for Canada Customs. So he was, he was a conflicted guy for sure. But he was always on top of that stuff. And so, you know, he always made sure that, he talked about things like that with me. And maybe at the time I didn't appreciate it as much as I should have. But I listened and I sure appreciate it now, because it gives me, having that kind of foundation, it really helps you navigate situations like we're in today.
Well, this one is freaking me out a bit, because, you know, I didn't pay attention to it politically when I was a kid. I mean, it was a family thing that we talked about and stuff, right? I had relatives that were separatists and stuff. And, you know, I grew up in BC. I don't even speak French, right? Like, I mean,
sure.
I had a very biased point of view and stuff like that. But when I got to university, you know, I just studied sociology, and there were, like, every professor and their dog, like, taught this in school, because it was like such a significant event in Canadian history. And I read a bunch of books about it. And one of the most hilarious things, a few things that stuck in my mind forever, ever since I read them, was the number one target of the Canadian Secret Service, the day before René Lévesque got elected in the Parti Québécois election in Quebec, was René Lévesque. He was the number one target of the Secret Service of Canada.
Oh, my God.
Okay? And then he won an election. So he wins this election, and the first thing he does, one of the first things he does, you know, after the party, you know, is he sets up a commission to investigate what the RCMP was doing. because he was a bit pissed off at the fact that they were like following him around
That's
everywhere and bugging his phone.
Awesome. You know what I mean? It's like, oh.
The information, Glenn, was so embarrassing. Yeah. Mind you, it was Parti Québécois, so like they weren't going to do any of this fucking stuff in English. So it was all in French, which
Even
was
better.
Kind of a mistake on René Lévesque's part because it should have been done in English because the Canadian federal government at the time was so embarrassed by what was being revealed under his commission that they ordered their own commission in English to clean it up and cover it up for the English-speaking part
of
the country.
Oh, my God,
we're going to... So that's one of the things
we're
I learned.
We're going to have a commission the commission that was originally about the commission.
Yeah, so...
What?
Yeah, doesn't that sound Canadian?
Yeah, it does very. Yeah. Listen...
The provincial commission gets covered up by a federal one. So here's the deal. Here's the bottom line. What they ended up doing under the War Measures Act,
yes.
right, was they spent an inordinate amount of time and energy investigating and spying on and harassing union members, peace movement members, anti-war members, and especially Indigenous organizers. And this is what bothers me about this declaration, because every time they declare shit like this, they use it to defend capital. And people who are anti-capital are going to have all their data mined. They're going to use it as an excuse to investigate everybody else other than the convoy.
Well,
maybe I'm paranoid. Maybe I'm exaggerating, but I just don't have a good
feeling
about
it. Hey, just
because
you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not out to get you. You know what I mean? But listen, to wrap this up, I guess what it boils down to for me and what we started talking about earlier was that there's no dialogue. We got a lot of name calling. We got a lot of people on the left and on the right pointing fingers, blaming, and just it's.
And both on the left and the right, Glenn, what's disturbing, which is what you've touched on many times in this conversation,
yeah.
is the fact that there's this extreme appetite and willingness to suspend people's rights.
Absolutely. So, as I said before, I never thought I would be agreeing with some of this, but, I have. And we're going to keep exploring this. I think this is really worth a couple more conversations, and we will have some guests in the very near future who are going to speak from, let's say both sides of the conversation, and we'll take it from there. But in the meantime, folks.
No, I'm looking forward to guests because like you, if I hear myself too much, I get kind of boring.
So the podcast is Wallace Hartley Presents. You can head on over to podbean.com where you can listen to the audio version. And we're also on all the major platforms. Now, we're not on all the major platforms. We're on a couple because I still can't figure out how to do the whole Apple thing, and I just don't like them. So we're on there, but you can catch us on our YouTube channel, which is Wallace Hartley Presents the Podcast. That's the name of the channel. Head over there. And thanks for dropping by, folks. We're going to close it out once again with some original music from right here in Vancouver, Mr. Mike Kirby. And this is the instrumental version of Black Coffee and Cigarettes. Thanks for dropping by, folks. Try your best not to be a dick. Have a good one.
Bye, y'all.